I'm an alcoholic, and my name's Scott. I'm also an addict. I hope that doesn't offend anybody, but it's part of my story. Forgive me if I bounce around and jump around. It's been a long, long time since I've spoken. I made the mistake of mentioning that to Glenn the other night, and I do realize this is a young people's meeting, and he kind of sandbagged me. I usually skulk in. I have a lot of friends here, or some friends here, and I slip into the back. But he asked me to speak, and I always feel better after I talk. It's nerve-wracking. Fortunately, 5 minutes before, you don't have too much. I didn't have too much time to get into my head. So I'll give you. Glenn says it's my favorite subject, so 15 minutes shouldn't be any problem at all. So, anyhow. I'm a transplant. I've been all over the country. I'm an analytical person, and I've looked back on my drugging and drinking, and I've one of those people that kind of has to know why. You know, what went wrong, what happened. I came from a very normal, middle of the road, middle class family from Atlanta, and parochial school and all that stuff. I wasn't abused. I wasn't a bad kid. I didn't get arrested. None of that stuff. But in the summer, in the late 70s, my father was transferred to the West Coast. And best I can figure out, this is when I really started to feel less than. We're very excited to move to California. And I woke up at 16 years old in Beverly Hills, California, going to Beverly High. And I don't tell you that to impress you at all. I tell you that because I was a long-haired, painfully skinny kid with thick Coke bottle glasses and a Southern accent. And I woke up in a high school where, you know, a Southern accent was dumb. And I had no friends. And, you know, I'm not trying to make it like it was a terrible thing, but it was kind of the beginning for me of being very, very uncomfortable around people and going into a shell. These people had famous last names. And drove Porsches and Ferraris and stuff like that, and I bolted the lights back on my dirt bike to drive to school. As one of my friends used to say, I couldn't get a date in high school with a $100 bill in my mouth. So it was a very, very intense experience. And to the best of my recollection, that's kind of where it started. And when I found alcohol, none of that stuff bothered me anymore. I was comfortable in any situation. It didn't bother me what and who had what or those kind of things, and it just sort of continued from there. I hit college and really found alcohol. I mean, really found alcohol. I'd mix it. I didn't know anything about drinking. I didn't know that you didn't mix stuff. I didn't know. And I got horribly sick, and like most of us did. Instead of getting up like a normal person the next morning and saying, I'm not going to do that again, I couldn't wait to get back into it. I felt so comfortable. I could dance. I could talk. I could function. I could talk to girls. It was fantastic. And let me make note of the time here so I don't go over or under. It took off from there. I loved a little bit of everything, and I won't go into other substances, but whatever you had, I'd do. And it kind of balled itself up. And I continued to rock along like this until I was 40 years old. I had no idea about the program. I had no idea about recovery. I had no idea really that there was anything wrong with me. The late 70s and 80s, I mean, cocaine was it in the 80s. Pot was legal when I was a kid. Quaaludes, all of that kind of stuff. And I'm not trying to glorify it, but the times were different. And the drugs were trendy and accepted and illegal, but everybody did them. And I thought it was okay. I didn't have any qualms about it. I traveled with a pretty fast crowd at that point, and just rocked along for a lot of years, doing a little of this and a little of that. You know, always hungover, never really choosing a career path, never really sticking to anything for any length of time. I would get bored with jobs and blame the lack of being consistent and losing a job on the fact that I was bored and I needed to go challenge myself and do something else. So just kind of rocked along with it. And when I hit 40, you hear about midlife crisis. When I hit 40, I really hit it hard. I had an extremely inappropriately young girlfriend, which shows, you know, talk about arrested development. That alone, looking back on it, was very embarrassing. And It wasn't her fault, but we got into opiates very heavily, and I won't go into a lot of detail on that, but that's what finally took me to my knees. And I have friends that party to this day, friends in Southern California that party to this day, and they were intervening on me. You know, these are guys sitting around a circle looking at me going, hey man, you're way off the reservation with this, and you need to go do something about it. And my story includes rehab. It was the worst possible fate for me in my mind. I went kicking and screaming to get my family off my back. 30 days, I bargained all the way in. 30 days and I'm out, and I was literally marking down the days and couldn't wait. And something happened around 27 or 28 days. I started feeling better. And I started looking at my life, and it wasn't a light switch going off or anything like that. I was a mess. And I literally didn't sleep for 2.5-3 months. All this crap that's been in my system for such a long time had to make its way out, and then you've got the horse thief without the alcohol, and that took a lot longer. So I stuck it out. I stayed with it for a while. I actually went on staff at the treatment center and spent 9 months there. It was the best time I ever spent. Actually having the luxury of taking that much time and working on myself and looking back at what I'd done, how many times I'd come close to killing myself, how many people's lives I had just completely disrupted and messed up, was overwhelming. It took a long, long time. I put 5 years together. I had sponsees. I spoke at meetings. I really embraced the program. And one of the things that I look back on now, one of the things I used to talk to my sponsees about, I'm a pilot, and flying's not hard, but all the training in flying is an emergency checklist. What happens if? What happens if? And I equated the program to that. 99% of the time, I don't feel like drinking or drugging, or I'm not tempted anymore. The obsession has left me. But what I used to tell my sponsees was, there's going to be that day when somebody sets something down in front of you, somebody spins around at a party and offers you a drink. You know, with me, it's a spur of the moment thing. It's an impulse. It's always been an impulse. You know, I'll try this, I'll try that, I'll do this, I'll do that. There's going to be that day when somebody lays down your drug of choice or a big glass of beer, whatever it is, in front of you at a moment when you don't expect it. And that's when you have to go to that emergency checklist. That's when all the work that I do at meetings, all the work that I do in the program pays off, because that impulse passes, that moment passes, and I don't use and bring myself back down to my knees. So I'll finish this up. That moment happened to me. My mother was diagnosed with brain cancer and died a relatively brief and horrible death. And I quit my job and flew to Florida to take care of her. And I hadn't been taking care of my program. I'd gotten myself on cruise control. I had this thing. I'd been to meetings. I had sponsors. I was doing all of that stuff, and I felt like I'd taken the test. I'd arrived. I'd done that. I checked it off my list. And when the fact that my mom got sick and passed away isn't why I went out. The reason I went out is because I wasn't ready. I hadn't been doing the work. I hadn't prepared for that 2% of the time when something, a shitstorm comes, and my tools were rusty. And I was in a lot of pain, and I found that old lattice work, that old way of taking care of that pain was the first thing that came to mind instead of program, instead of what I needed to do. So I went out, and I'll end with this. I was out for 2 or 3 years, and I don't want to minimize it. I didn't go to the horrible depths that I did the first time, but it took me a long, long time to come back. Next month I'll have 2 years again, and next month I'll have 2 years again. Does that mean 5 minutes or 5 seconds? Darn. Next month I'll have 2 years again. And for whatever reason, this time around, I'm really cherishing and enjoying it even more than it's different than the first time around. It's easy for me to look back and compare. I was so torn up and so torn down when I first came in and when I went through rehab that it was easy to teach me because I was stripped bare. I mean, there just wasn't anything left. I got things back pretty quickly the first time around, and I will say I got a little bit complacent. And it's funny, people will tell me now, oh yeah, 5 years is that point where you really have to watch out. You kind of feel like you got it at 5 years, and that's a lot of people apparently go out then. And my retort to that was, nobody told me that. You know, I wasn't paying attention, and I went out. The point that really got driven home for me was that there's no guarantee that you come back. There are so many times I should have been dead. Going back out again was just not an option with me. And I came close to killing myself again after having 5 years and after having the program, you know, down pat. Obviously I didn't. And obviously I have to double down this time and try and find the holes from the first time. I know there was some complacency involved in that kind of stuff. But second time around, I'll say this. I used to admire people that would come back into the program and that had been out and come back, but there was a little part of me that looked down on them when I came in the first time, because I thought, how in the world can you know now what I know and go out? And then if you do, it takes an awful lot of balls to come back. You know, how do you do that? But I had this prejudice in my mind that that's never going to be me, and I don't understand how anybody can do that. Well, it can happen, and it can happen really easily, and there's no guarantee, at least for me, that you get back. And a lot of time, a lot of water went under the bridge when I did get a chance to get back. And the last thing I'll say is I compare my program now to my program then, and I compare the way I feel now and the way I felt then. And I honestly want to get back to this is part of it, speaking and getting involved. I've been kind of dancing around the periphery for a while, but I have to get back to feeling the way I felt, not being worried about economic things, not being worried about stuff, not worrying about what people think. It's a good place to be. And if you happen to be there now, don't take it for granted. That's all I can really say to you. Don't take it for granted. It's a long, tough climb back, even if you've done it before. And anyhow, that's all I got. Thanks.